Just ahead, a conversation with reporter Dawn Vaughn.
It's just so, it's so lazy, and it's just a bunch of crap.
Please silence all electronic devices.
Mr. Speaker!
I have said this since the end of June. I'm surprised that the entire budget was held up over one policy issue.
Lord, strike me down if I vote for this bill.
You are making a mockery of this process. You are deceiving all of North Carolina. Your leadership is an embarrassment to the history of this great state.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the 4th Estate Dungeon on West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along. As always, conversation today about journalism and candidate filings. We're chatting with state government and politics reporter Dawn Vaughn of the News and Observer. Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you.
A bit of a formality earlier this week when Republican U.S. Senator Tom Tillis filed for re-election. We expected this. We knew it was coming. You were there. Let's start at the Board of Elections with this candidate filing. What was the most newsworthy part of Tillis's filing for another six-year term?
Really, well, I'd plan on going. We weren't even sure if we were going to do a story on it or if it would just be update, here's everyone that's running, because everyone's known for months that Tillis is running. We get near daily press releases from his campaign. But the news was really the out of the reporter's questions he took after. I asked him about this. Politico had listed him as a probably no when on impeachment, and I said, well, which is it? He said it's a definitely no. So that was the news out of that he's a definite no. And of course people are saying, how can you already say definitely no when, you know, this hasn't even impeachment, you know, trial hasn't even gone to the Senate yet. And I said, I asked him, you know, could anything change that definitely no? And he said, if there's something, you know, out there that we're not aware of. But he just really the past year, less than a year, he's really aligned himself with Trump and kind of hitched his wagon.
Very much so.
Especially with the endorsement from Trump, and right. He's all in on that. So he's definitely all in. So I guess that was, you know, a lot of it is the, you know, they want the attention on a, you know, on a Monday morning, and all the media is there and, you know, coming in, the official filing, greeting supporters and everything like
right.
that. But he, you know, he stuck around and took, I don't think there's anyone where we didn't really get our questions answered that morning outside the office. So,
which is nice, because sometimes you can't always get Senator Tillis or Senator Burr on the phone.
Yes, and sometimes politicians run away from you, so mm-hmm. literally, and it's nice not to have to chase them down. It's great when they, you know, say that they're going to stop and take questions, and it's more than one or two, like with the presidential candidates that have come in. Warren was the only one that did like the brief gaggle after, and it was all this rigmarole for us all to be shoulder to shoulder, and then took barely anything. And that was just kind of like, you know, what was the point here? But Tillis, you know, took his time and answered everything that we had, not extensively or anything, but I thought it was his availability was pretty good on that.
So let's add a little bit of context to this race here. This is the Senate seat that Jesse Helms held for five terms. And I'm going all the way back to 1972 just to kind of illustrate the fact that Helms had it for five terms. Since his retirement, this has been a one-term seat. Now, obviously, U.S. Senate terms are 6 years, so we're dealing with a relatively short sample size here. But Elizabeth Dole won in 2002. Kay Hagan upset and beat her in 2008. And Tillis defeated Hagan in what was, at the time, the most expensive Senate race. I believe it was more than $100 million of tracked spending in 2014. So Tillis mm-hmm. is trying to avoid that one-and-done thing that has happened in the terms since the late Jesse Helms retired. So you mentioned the challengers. Garland Tucker had announced that he was going to run against Tillis but mm-hmm. is not actually filing. I mean, he's been in the race, but not exactly for the last few months. He was a Republican. On the other side, there are five Democrats who have actually filed at this point.
Yep.
I'm going to go ahead and list them. Please jump on me if I'm mispronouncing any of these names. There's Erica Smith, who's the current state senator. There's Cal Cunningham, the former state senator who ran for U.S. Senate in 2010 and lost, if memory serves, in a primary to Elaine Marshall. There's also Trevor Fuller, who I believe is a Mecklenburg County commissioner, mm-hmm. Steven Swenson, and Atul Goel, G-O-E-L. Apologies mm-hmm. if I'm mispronouncing that. So there are five on the Democratic side. What did Tillis say, if anything, about any of the challengers, Democrats who have filed or – there are no Republicans who have filed to seek the U.S. Senate nomination at this point. But as you alluded to, we may very well see one. What did Tillis have to say, if anything, about those challengers?
Well, it's interesting getting them to talk about each other because Cal Cunningham had the similar deal where it's like, here's the press conference. I'm going to run. And we all know you're running. It was just to get the cameras there and everything. And he had that last week. And I asked him about, because Erica Smith is, they're potentially, Cunningham has the national Democrats backing him. But Smith has, in a couple different polls, has, had a little more support. So it's kind of a toss-up between them, I guess, the front runners. But that doesn't mean that the other people are out of the running. They're just not as high profile yet. So I tried to get Cunningham to say something about Smith. And he just said, I'm, campaigning directly to the people. And Smith hasn't said anything about Cunningham. She just mentioned polls when I talked to her briefly. So it's more they're not, trashing each other. But with the campaigns themselves, like Tillis's campaign has come out against Cunningham and Smith, which right. is almost given Smith more attention than if, with Cunningham having the national backing. So every time that they file, there's, another or press release from them. But what Tillis said was these two things that he obviously thinks that conservative voters don't like about Democrats, and that is the Green New Deal and Medicare for All, because he mentioned that a couple times on Monday. So I think I don't remember if he mentioned Smith or Cunningham by name or not, but he mentioned a couple times about, this is like too progressive and Green New Deal, Medicare for All. So that's what he's pushing as being the alternative to that. He said he's not worried about the primary, but of course, what else is he going to say? He's not going to tell us he's worried.
Right.
And he said, he wants to make sure it stays a Republican seat. And that's a message to, Republican voters. Do you right. want to keep this Republican seat? Go ahead and support him. And,
So it's going to be interesting to see what separates those voters. And then, of course, who takes on Tillis and presumably Tillis in the general election. Do you have a sense of who Tillis would rather face in the general? The sitting senator, who's an African-American woman, versus the former mm-hmm. senator, who's Cunningham, is a white man?
Tillis has – the thing about incumbents is you have the name recognition. But you were talking about that seat, and that's a pretty high-profile seat. Well, outside of North Carolina, everybody knew Elizabeth Dole was, So Cunningham or Smith don't necessarily have a higher profile if he's worried, right. From that. So I think as long as he can paint them as, Republicans like bring up, Ocasio-Cortez, if he can group with, Green New Deal and group, either one of them with that and as somebody right. that they don't want to vote for.
And we saw a lot of that in 2018, just to flashback briefly, in the open or the redo race in the 9th Congressional, where it was McCready and Bishop, we saw a lot of messaging that tried to pair Democrat Dan McCready mm-hmm. with Speaker Nancy Pelosi, when in actuality they're pretty different in terms of that Democratic right. spectrum. But that was one of the efforts made by Bishop and some of the Republican folks.
Well, you also have people who don't want women in office, who don't want African-Americans in office. So if it's white man versus, white man versus African-American woman, that's unfortunately a factor for some voters.
Chatting here on the WDNC Politics Podcast with Dawn Vaughn. You can find her on Twitter at Dawn B. Vaughn. That's D-A-W-N-B-V-A-U-G-H-A-N. Candidate filing is taking place. It runs through early to mid to
20th,
late next
yeah.
week, the 20th. Thank you. I think one of the – or two of the races that are going to receive a lot of attention are the 2nd Congressional and the 6th Congressional. As a reminder, these are seats that were redrawn. Districts were reestablished following court-encouraged redistricting. George Holding not running in the 2nd. Deborah Ross would – probably be seen as the front runner there at this point. We'll see who else gets into that race.
Someone else, I think it's Andrew Terrell.
Is also in that race.
And he said that he would be the first openly LGBT Congress member in the South. I don't know if that's true or not.
I do not have the knowledge in between my ears to dispute that, but I can't imagine there are many LGBTQ mm-hmm. members of Congress from the South. So that's the 2nd. The sixth is the Mark Walker seat, unclear if he's going to run for re-election or if he will run for something else. This race seems to be getting a little bit more cluttered. Kathy Manning, who I believe ran in the 13th congressional district last year against Ted Budd and lost, she's running in the sixth. Bruce Davis, who ran for Congress in 2016, he's also run a couple of times for state senate. He's in this sixth congressional Democratic primary. And also Derwin Montgomery, who's a Democratic House member here in the North Carolina House from Forsyth County. He's from Winston-Salem. He was first elected to the city council in Winston-Salem when he was 21. So will be interesting, that sixth congressional primary. I think those two will get plenty of attention. What else are you looking at in terms of candidate filing? What else has caught your eye?
Everybody wants to be a lieutenant governor. There is, I think the field of candidates is like 10 or 11.
It's 11 and counting.
Which is interesting. I guess it's, you know, it's a jumping ground for governor, that you don't have a whole lot of power. Maybe, you know, arguably you might have more power depending on the just as a member of the, you know, regular member of the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. But it's much higher profile, and there is that cool house over there. So I'm going to find out more why so many people want it. One is Mark Johnson on the Republican side, who is not running for state superintendent. And then on the Democrat side, there's Senator Terry Van Dyne and Representative Chaz Beasley and others. And, you know, when you have a huge field like that, the risk is that, especially if you're earlier in your political career, that you gave up a, you know, potential easy reelection in your district to go for something bigger, and then you lose it, and then what do you do?
So in this lieutenant governor's race that is crowded and, again, likely to grow in terms of the number of candidates, just a reminder, a mention that for these current members of the legislature, and just for example, on the Democratic side, you've got Representative Yvonne Holley from Wake County, Representative Chaz Beasley from Mecklenburg County, and also Senator Terry Van Dyne from Buncombe County. You can't run congruently. You can't run for a legislative seat as well as a statewide office. So for two of those three, they are going to be out of an elected, at least two of those three, maybe
right,
all
right.
three. They're going to be out of a position come potentially May, because I think we're probably going to have a runoff in the lieutenant governor's race. Nine more days in filing. To some extent, this will be the most consequential election that North Carolina has seen in at least 40 years when you consider president, Senate, governor all on the ballot, as well as the power at the North Carolina General Assembly. And because it's a year that ends in a zero, it means that whoever wins will have the ability to draw maps and then defend oneself in court over the next 10 years, because they'll get to do redistricting. And on top of all that, two notable but minor subplots. One is the Republican National Convention taking place in Charlotte in August. And more than minor is the fact that three Supreme Court seats, North Carolina Supreme Court seats, are on the ballot next year. So there's a bevy of stuff. There's so much stuff that's going on. Let me ask you this. What is most exciting for you, to you, about 2020?
I guess all of it. I'm excited about all of it, you know, state and presidential election, and just, you know, seeing how we can make as many predictions as we want. You can poll as many people as you want, but you still have no idea what's going to happen until people actually vote. So that's probably what I'm most excited about.
We're going to transition. I want to ask you and chat with you about the world of journalism. We were reminded this week of an unfortunate and an unfounded trope that exists in our industry. It's this notion that female journalists have to sleep their way to get stories and sleep their way to the top. New movie out. This is some backdrop here, some context. New movie out called Jewel, made by Clint Eastwood, or produced by Clint Eastwood. It's about Richard Jewel, the security guard who spotted a suspicious package in Atlanta's Centennial Park back in 1996. He alerted the authorities. They cleared the area. Then an explosion happened, the famous bomb that went off at the Olympic Park. He saved dozens of lives, if not hundreds of lives. So there's this new movie about Jewel and how more or less his life kind of unraveled after his heroic act. It was reported at the time that he was a suspect in the bombing. He was ultimately cleared. He sued several media organizations. And one of the figures after the bombing was Kathy Scruggs, and she was a reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And there is no evidence. There's never been mention of Kathy Scruggs sleeping with an FBI agent at the time by her colleagues or presently. No, nobody has ever said this, but yet that is what is being depicted in the movie. That's how she got her scoop. And it's this, again, tired, unfortunate trope.
It's misogyny is
and
what it is.
Yes, it is. It's sexist. It's very frustrating. And I know we share that opinion. My question, I guess, to get us started on this is, what can we do to try to fight this trope? What can male journalists do?
Fight the patriarchy. Yeah. It's garbage. It's a 1950s massage. It's so many things. Number one, like incredibly offensive, lazy. It's just garbage.
It's bold.
Like there's no – yeah, I guess we can't cuss on this show, but like that's what it is. The idea that I'm just so surprised, really. I mean, I'm not surprised, but I am surprised that, you know, 30, 40 years from when that was like some sort of plot device, that it's just so – it's so lazy and it's just a bunch of crap.
In the movie, the actress who depicts – Kathy Scruggs is Olivia Wilde. And what makes her portrayal perhaps even more nauseating to me is the fact that both of Olivia Wilde's parents are journalists. So, like, what are you doing? And I hope that Christmas or Hanukkah or the holidays, whenever they get together, I hope she faces some thorough questions from her journalism parents.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, it's movies and it's never what the reality is. There was this awful movie some years ago called Main Street that was set in Durham, and they called it Durham and said all this stuff about Durham. And I was covering Durham at the time. And you know, it was one of those, again, shouting at the screen. So that's not what that is. And I think that's sort of that's the problem when you use real people in movies and then it's just best not to come up with, you know, something totally fictional. Don't trash a real person for your, you know, poetic license.
And Kathy Scruggs actually passed away in 2001, so she does not have the ability to defend herself. She shouldn't have to defend herself, but she cannot defend herself, which is also a frustrating element to all of this. We're going to turn the corner and end with a series of unrelated questions to what we've been talking about here. On the WNC Politics podcast, you can answer these as rapidly as you are able and would like. Tell me something that we don't know about a Gen Xer who grew up in Northern Virginia.
Well, I was an Army brat, so I moved around, and then middle school and high school in Northern Virginia. So I had pink hair in high school.
Before all pink or streaks of pink?
Before it became mainstream by, you know, Green Day and whoever else. So it's called Manic Panic, and I got it at this place called Commander Salamander in Georgetown in D.C., and it washed out after a month. But my friend and I did our hair like the night before church, and her family was the one who was lighting the Advent candle that next day. I remember her parents weren't happy about her pink streak in her hair.
How often do family and friends turn to you to mediate a political debate or discussion?
Well, what's interesting is my parents are both independents, but one of them leans one direction and one leans the other direction. So growing up at our dinner table, we would talk about all sides of an issue, which really is a perfect training ground for a political reporter. And I feel that way personally. Of course, I'm an independent, nonpartisan, and I do see all sides of things regardless of whether or not that was my job or not. So yeah, I don't know if people ask me to. Maybe I just do without asking. That's kind of, you know, reporters will just barge in and say what they want. So, yeah.
When and for how long do you put down social media? During the week?
My phone, I'm not looking at it right this second.
That is true. It's been down for this entire conversation.
I know.
I'm
thinking, what is on there? Do I need to look at it? When do I put it down? I guess when I'm doing something like with my, you know, son and husband, like if we're out like at basketball practice, something like that, I don't need to look at that. But when I'm sitting on the couch, sure, I'm looking at it all the time.
Favorite exhibit at the museum?
I was just thinking about them this morning and how sad I am about them closing. My Twitter photo and like both of the photos are from when I went there earlier this summer. Gosh, the favorite part. I don't know. I teared up. I just loved all of it. The Berlin Wall, we're talking about Generation X, that was a really significant moment for me just as a kid seeing that happen and the fact that they had a piece of that. And I actually have a tiny little piece of it. I had a friend in the military. His dad was stationed in Germany when the wall came down in 89 and sent me a little piece of it. Yeah, I don't know, all the front pages, that's exciting. Just all of it, the gift shop, I bought a lot of stuff.
I ask because it is, as you mentioned, both your avatar and your backdrop photo on your Twitter handle, which again is Don B. Vaughn. And I'm going to the museum this weekend, not to be overly romanticize it, but to say goodbye because the museum is closing.
Have you been there before?
I have a couple times,
okay.
But I haven't been in 7 or 8 years.
We got there like a little too close to closing, so I didn't get to spend as much time in that one exhibit where you pull out all the papers for
right.
the years.
Right.
And that's something I would want to spend more time on. I think that was really cool.
On Twitter at Don, DAWNB, Vaughn, VAUGHAN, North Carolina government and politics reporter at The News and Observer. Don, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know the deal by now. Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. You can download the program and become a subscriber there as well. Remember to tune in for a review of state political news on Fridays. Becky Gray and Rob Schofield will provide the insights. And next week, I'm planning to sit down with former Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court, Henry Fry. So if you have questions or topics for me to consider, feel free to drop me a line on Twitter at @J_tips. Thanks again for listening. For Don Vaughn, I'm Jeff Tiberi.